through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number two, and it's a pleasure to bring in Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network. Going to talk to him about what's going on in college football right now, as well as maybe a little bit, a couple questions about Pete Carroll, because Yogi knows him pretty well. But, Yogi, pleasure to have you here. We're looking at these, I won't call them scandals yet, what's going on with Washington State and Cassidy Woods, and also the news that broke it about Colorado State, where certain players and staffers are saying that they were dissuaded from reporting their COVID symptoms and quarantining. Then you got other players saying, no, that's not the case. When you hear about these stories, how do you distinguish between complaints that you think are legitimate and complaints that are just maybe made up?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. Pleasure to talk to you all again. And I love anything that Jake Heaps is involved in, so this show is awesome. But with that being said, to answer the question, I think the biggest thing we can do when anything like this hits, and it doesn't happen very often, but it's to just pause and listen, to be really blunt. Like, when everything came out with Washington State, you saw it just continually coming out, right? So when did you want to insert yourself with an opinion? But you kind of want to wait until the end, until you talk to people, at least in my purview. For Colorado State, that one shocked me, you know, when it came out. And to your point of, like, there's more that's coming out about that. So that's where I'm at. You kind of knew that when COVID came, to me at least, in the springtime, all right, if we're going to have a season again and people are going to want to play, it's going to get really dicey and get really interesting, not just around the health and wellness of student-athletes. I think everybody's on the same page there, but on how things get reported, when they get reported. And that's, to me, the Colorado State situation, the first one. Hopefully it's not of many, but you wonder if the season does get going, like, how do teams handle it if their star player maybe was around somebody with contact tracing but doesn't have it? Do you report it? Like, those are all the things that a skeptic would definitely lean into. But for me, I try to just pause in these scenarios, try to gather as much information and be measured whenever I offer an opinion on it.
Let's examine here the thinking of a head coach, because we know the head coaches in college football have a ton of power. So in the case of Rolovich, let's just say that he did what Cassidy Woods initially made it look like he did. Let's say he tried to dissuade him from joining We Are United. Or in the case of Colorado State, let's say that the university or that the head coach tried to tell kids, hey, don't report your symptoms. Wouldn't those coaches have to know that that's going to get out, that in 2020, all of that stuff gets made public, whether it gets leaked out or players complain? Like, coaches, would any coach be that foolish?
Well, I'll tackle the Colorado State one first regarding, again, a hypothetical. I don't know enough of the details to give you an opinion on what has or hasn't happened, but I do know enough times in college football, there's so many people communicating from, you know, the time the head coach or athletic department makes a statement and then a student athlete hears it, right? It could go through his coordinator, position coach, graduate assistant, roommate, you know, and before you know it, it's the game of, you know, telephone, where can you keep the actual sentence from starting and being the one that's completed in a room of 10 people? It's virtually impossible, right? How many studies have been proven to show that? So I don't know in that regard. Regarding Coach Rolo, I've known him for 15 years, and I really think he's one of the few coaches that truly are player-centric. You know, he really wears that on his sleeve. You know, I think a lot of the coaches, at least in the Pac-12, I think every coach goes through the lens of their players, but Coach Rolo, he's always been extreme in that regard, wherever he was at. I remember calling games as the OC at Hawaii, let alone the head coach in Nevada and his stops in between. So when that one came out, I said, let me just pause and see what's going on around here. You know, let me make sure that I talk to some people and see what, you know, everybody's lens is on it, from, you know, obviously the one that Cassidy had, of course, Coach Rolovich and the institution. And at the end of the day, when it came to COVID-19 and him saying, hey, Cassidy, like, if you're going to lean one way, opt out because of COVID-19, I'm okay with that because that was going to, that's going to protect the student athlete. And that's what Coach Rolovich said in his statement. I think they put it out, what was it, early yesterday or the day before. My days are kind of jumbled together, but I don't see him as someone saying, hey, if you believe in something, you can't be on this team. I, for me, in my relationship with him, which I think is pretty in depth, I can't imagine him thinking or communicating in that way. Clearly, he didn't communicate clearly. And clearly enough with Cassidy, and Cassidy had his point and made it loud, and clearly it caught a ton of steam.
Yogi, your days might be jumbled together, bro, because you're a new dad to a newborn and Makai. How is the family doing? Everybody doing good?
Yeah, man. You know how it is. You know, we're growing. We got five when you count the dog, and we always count the dog in this house. So, yeah, not a lot of sleep, but it's basically football, sleep, trying to dodge, you know, fingers and hands from a newborn from poking your eyes out. But you know, we're doing it with a smile on our face.
You gotta love it, man. Gotta love it. Well, you know, you're kind of the perfect guest to have on during this crazy time because you bring such great perspective, one from being so close to being inundated with, you know, college athletes and being with them from the high school level, understanding their thinking and their thought process, but also seeing this from a bigger landscape of understanding how head coaches think and the Pac-12 in general think. When you saw the hashtag We Are United movement come out, what was your initial reaction first? And then what do you think is the end goal or end result of this? How does this shake out?
Yeah, a lot to that question, and I'll try not to ramble. But overall, like, you heard something brewing, right, in a couple weeks coming into it. But no coach that I talked to, including Coach Rolovich or athletic director or administrator on the Pac-12 side, nobody knew exactly what was coming, right? And I think the, you know, the document that was circulated and eventually published online on Sunday, that changed up until, you know, Sunday. So nobody really knew what was going to come, how it was going to come. I made sure that I talked to some players about it, and I found that, like, everybody wasn't connected to it as dramatically as you might think. With that said, as a former player, and I go through that lens, and I'm sure you do, I applaud these guys because I know 20 years ago when I was playing, I would have never had the courage to do something like this, right? I don't know if you would have at any of your stops along the way. I don't know if anybody would have 2 years ago. Yeah, exactly. So I applaud them, number one. Number two, and I think this is really important, and I think is why you guys have a microphone and my job, is to come out with the truth and not build up narratives that aren't accurate. So what am I saying? I'm saying that the Pac-12 conference and Larry Scott's office and the athletes, it's not us versus them, right? The Pac-12, among any conference, and this has been documented for history, Pac-10, Pac-8, of course, the Pac-12 is about supporting the student athletes, right? You look at mental health, you look at concussion protocols, you look at anything that has been about this conference, racial inequities as of late. The conference has been leading the charge in that regard. When you look at what we've done, whether it was most recently Condoleezza Rice, Eric Kendricks, and Steve Kerr, you know, on a panel with student athletes around racial inequities in this country, let alone this, the footprint of the Pac-12. So I think that's an important thing to note because I think from afar you could say, oh, it's the office, it's the commissioners, it's the coaches versus the players. And that's not it. And I think the players did a nice job of saying that, of, hey, my coach has supported us and has heard us. Larry Scott has obviously communicated with the athletes. So with that said, there's 50% that's already happening, right, the things that I already referenced. I think there's 25% that is not in the purview of the Pac-12, right? We're talking about COVID testing right now. It's state and local government in terms of setting the policy, at least for public institutions right now. So there's a lot of hands in that. Same thing with NIL. That's, you know, in the court system. Same thing when we're talking about, you know, being able to transfer. That's an NCAA thing, right? So I just think that the requests are muddied. It's not as though Larry Scott and the commissioner's office can come in and say, check, 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 yes, 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 everything's happening, we're good. You know, there's a huge process. And then, of course, the financial side of it, NIL will happen, it should happen, but regarding getting TV revenue, I think when you understand how college athletics work, at least as of right now, you know, that one is I think, a little bit far-fetched in terms of a reality. So the request, I celebrate the essence of it, the form of it. You know, you can poke some holes in it, but overall, I really celebrate these athletes for coming together, communicating, using their voice, and I think being measured to a certain degree, because they're not all saying we're not playing. You know, they understand that this thing doesn't happen overnight, and they hopefully can change college football and athletics for the better for the institution that some of these upperclassmen, you know, may leave behind whenever they decide to either graduate or move on to the next phase of their career.
Well said, Yogi. I'm wondering, I know this is a big question and none of us know the answer, but just based on everything you know now and everything you've seen, how confident are you that we're going to see a full football season, college football season?
Yeah, what a great question. And I feel like that's something, you know, I talked to an 18-day-old at 3 in the morning. Hey, we can have a season or not, man, let alone my wife or anybody in the media. I don't know. You know, and I think Larry Scott, I don't know if you guys saw it. I interviewed him and David Shaw, Ray Anderson, and Doug Ackerman, who's the medical voice in the Pac-12 right now on Friday. And the biggest word that everybody's used is fluid and flexibility. And I think when we've seen people step out of bounds, like I remember Tennessee's AD a couple months ago, say, we're going to have a full stadium. It might appease some fans because in sports we want finalities, but the other side of that is dramatically low, right? Or Texas A&M when they did that. And I think our conference, you could look at any quote from Jen Cohen or Jimmy Lake or Pat Chun or Larry Scott or anybody involved in this to say, hey, let's just take it one step at a time. And the schedule was a huge part of it. You know, and how it got built and the flexibility and the fluidity and how games can fold. And USC, UCLA is supposed to play on September 26th, probably going to be played Halloween weekend, might be played in December, might not be played at all. But I think it's our job to kind of go down that road, that timeline, and say, okay, let's just see what happens. Over the next 2 weeks, can the curve get flattened? I think Utah and Wazoo, I'm sure they feel good, and Colorado about starting training camp. To the Arizona and California schools, I don't know about that. You know, I think there's a ways to go there. So we'll see. But I'm hopeful. That's for sure. I'm not going to go dark until you know, we're told there's no season and I'm told I'm not going to broadcast any games this year.
Well, I like ending that on a little bit of a positive note. So I'm gonna go to a much more serious conversation, Yogi. I hope you're ready for this. Jake and I have an ongoing competition. Well, me and Curtis, who I don't know if you know, Curtis is running our board right now. He produces for Clayton. Jake, as you know, you're friends with him. He's got a quarterback camp. And so we're trying to recruit some help for our own quarterback
camp. Yeah, it's
a
competing
one. It's a competing camp. We haven't started it yet, but we'll be teaching the basics, a 13-step drop. Whatever other, you know, we know that you have some experience with this. We're wondering if you're willing to, you know, maybe you could coach for us. I mean, we know you're tight with Jake.
Yeah, leave Jake in the desk.
Yeah, leave him behind and you know, ditch the zero and get with the heroes. What do you say, Yogi?
Well, I go way back to 2009 when I met Mr. Jake Heaps at the Elite 11, which, oh, by the way, he was the MVP of. And he loved competition. He loved being on the razor's edge of it. So, yeah, I'll gladly join your team.
Wow.
I know I'm going to get the best out of him.
What?
And get the best out of us.
There you go.
You heard it here first.
Woo!
See, the thing is I can't even be mad at that because in the way – this is the way Yogi Roth works is he does this in a way where he's trying to get the best out of somebody else. Like, he's not even doing it out of spite. He's doing it because he's trying to better other people. Yogi, I just hate you for putting me in this bad spot here, but I appreciate the competition, brother.
No, it's going to be a good competition. I think Jake knows our quarterback camp. I mean, come on. I mean, yeah, it's you and Russell Wilson, but it's also me and Curtis. We have no athletic background, that's not going to stop us. We have Yogi Roth now.
Yogi, you got an uphill battle, my friend.
I do, but I've been to your camp, so I'll be able to steal some of your drills now. Don't worry. We'll do a little copycat action.
Thanks, Yogi.
You got it.
Thanks for coming on, brother.
Coach Yogi.
All right, let's – I'm not – do I – am I, like, involved in this thing at all?
Or yeah, Tom, you can
– Tom, I mean, you can – I mean –
You want a third camp? We got a third camp going?
I think – I mean, you can be our special teams coach or something.
I don't
You can be quality control.
I don't want to.
All right.
Tell you what I do want to do is some four down territory.
This is four down territory, brought to you by MM Comfort Systems.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Jake, did you hear something from DK Metcalf that fired you up?
Oh, boy, did I ever, Tom. Did I ever hear something from DK Metcalf that just got me pumped up? Here, cut number three, DK Metcalf talking about how he can be much more than just an X receiver that is placed in one spot of the field.
Pretty much just the connection with Russ, you know, learning the playbook more in depth. My role won't be just an X receiver. You know, they can move me around whenever possible.
Yes! Give me some more of that, please. Because this is what I've been preaching about DK Metcalf since last year, is DK, as a young rookie, showed that he can handle the role that was given to him in terms of being an X receiver, handling, you know, the six routes that they asked him to master. And boy, did he do that in a hurry. And it quickly led to them eventually midway through the year starting to expand his route tree. Well, now I believe DK Metcalf, through the work that he's put in this offseason, through his workmanlike mentality, has now grown to a place where A, physically, he's a very gifted player, and B, mentally, I think he's ready to take the next step, which is to become a true elite receiver in this league. And what do true elite receivers in this league do? They get moved around all over the field and are placed in different spots, so they become mismatched nightmares. They become problems for defenses and defensive coordinators because they, A, don't know where they're going to line up on the field, which then leaves them in a very difficult spot to try and match coverage to limit that player. So I think this is a great thing for individually for DK, for the quarterback Russell Wilson, and for the team in general if DK can be put around all over the field and used in a variety of different ways.
Second down. Stacey, what's the most important thing that needs to happen on the Seahawks offensive line this year?
Now, obviously, my immediate answer would be pass protection. Let's up that this year, but I think what I'm actually going to go with is something a little broader, more of an idea as opposed to something
Please.
You can measure. And that's going to be development of linemen outside of Dwayne Brown. Pro Football Focus came out with an article ranking the top offensive tackles of 2019 heading into the 2020 season. And they have a separate article looking at the offensive line rankings. One thing that both articles have in common is just saying how good Dwayne Brown is. So in the offensive tackle ranking, they note that even though he didn't perform at a top-tier level last season, he still ranked 20th out of 82 qualifying tackles. And this is important. They say he hasn't ranked outside the top 25 in the past decade. So even though he might have lost a step just as a result of aging, he's still very much the anchor to Seattle's offensive line. And this is important. They note the one player keeping the unit from ranking in the bottom of the league. Brown by far has the highest grade of any Seahawks offensive lineman. Again, this is Pro Football Focus's grading system, but I think it's pretty all-encompassing. The next closest was 63.2. Brown has an 82, so that's a big gap. I think the best thing to happen for the Seahawks this year, especially since Brown is getting older and inching toward the end of his contract, is for other guys to step up and be that guy. You can't go into the Seahawks season year in and year out thinking, well, at least you've got Dwayne Brown. We saw at the end of last season what happened when Brown was injured. The line just started to fall apart. And this year, you're without basically all of your starters on the right-hand side. You've got a new right guard, a new right tackle, and a new center all competing there. So you need someone outside of Dwayne Brown to step up.
Third down. Jake, why do you think only one Seahawk has opted out of the season?
Well, obviously, I think, first off, it's luck. I think it's luck that the Seahawks have been fortunate enough to have only one player, and that was Chance Warmack, opt out of this season. But I also do think it goes to show the type of player that these Seahawks typically like to get. They like to get players that are hungry, that are passionate, that love the game of football. And I think that that's it, one attribution that you can put towards only having one opt-out for this team, that there's a bunch of guys that love, genuinely love the game and want to play it at all costs. Secondly, I think that everybody in that building is excited to go to work because they know that something special is on the horizon. And it's just a matter of, can everybody come together? And I think everybody wants to do their part, wants to come together and be one of those cogs in the wheel to help them churn out a spectacular, special season. So I think the energy level, the excitement level that is within that building here in Renton, Washington at the VMAC is at an all-time high despite everything that's going around with COVID and everything else. A lot of players, everyone is excited to get after it.
Fourth down. Bobby Wagner was ESPN's pick for a guy to have a bounce back season. Now, how can you have a bounce back year the year after you've led the team in tackles? How does that work?
Yeah. Yeah, great question. And not only led the team in tackles, but you led the NFL in tackles. Bobby Wagner voted an All-Pro. Bobby Wagner voted a Pro Bowler. And yet, it's considered having a bounce-back season. Well, I think it just goes to show the perspective of what we think Bobby Wagner should do and be. And that is be a major disruptor, a major playmaker out on the field. And a couple years ago, he garnered some MVP votes. He garnered Defensive Player of the Year votes because of those big plays that he created. Well, I do believe that Bobby could have a bounce-back season in that regard, in terms of making more tackles for loss, getting more sacks, getting his hands on the ball a little bit more, because I truly believe that this team, now with the acquisition of Jamal Adams, is going to be more aggressive rather than playing the conservative two high safeties, you know, 35-plus percent of the time, which was unusual for Pete Carroll. I think they're going to allow Bobby Wagner to be more aggressive, and I think that's going to lead to a spectacular year for him personally. But it's pretty crazy to think that that's how high the expectations are for B-Wags. Unbelievable year, statistically. The most important player on his team by far, and yet he needs to have he can have a bounce-back season in 2020. That's pretty nuts.
Is that the preferred nickname for him, B-Wags?
Yes.
It's not B-Weezy or nothing?
No. It's not. It's none of that. It's just B-Wags.
B-Wags. All right. I'm going to call him Bobby next time I see him. That's just me. But you can call him
B-Wags. That's probably a good idea. I'll call him B-Wags.
Especially given how critical I've been over him, like, with basically no real reason to be. All right, coming up, is it just unbelievably important that some of these young players for the Seahawks finally step up this year? We'll talk about that in the halftime show next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Check out Curtis Rogers' Twitter if you can, everybody. At a kid from Kent.
And at Stacey Rost.
And at Stacey Rost. That's some good stuff going on there.
We're advertising for our quarterback camp.
Yeah, and also maybe taking shots at Jake, but, you know.
It's fine. I mean, we have Yogi Roth now.
Yeah. Oh, the people in this life who get the most praise also deserve the most criticism.
That's I think
I
that's fair.
Say, right, Jake? Yeah.
I hate you all.
Okay.
It's just jealous.
All right, Stacey, I think you were the one who was lobbying for this the hardest.
I was.
That the young players on the Seahawks need to make an impact this year. Why is that so important for this year?
I think it's especially important because, A, they traded away their next two first-round picks. And you can't just expect, well, I think that development needs to start sooner rather than later. So not only do you need guys to develop because you can't count on, in 2021, all of a sudden these guys become stellar. You need that to start now. But also you need development, particularly among the young players on your defensive line, because that's your greatest need. And that's the thing that could keep you from getting to a Super Bowl. Your offense is mostly solid. Your offensive line needs to come along and needs to grow. But otherwise, your offense finished the year okay, minus their injuries. The defense needed a lot of help. You added Jamal Adams, that's huge. You have Quandre Diggs for a full season, that's huge. Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, all still there. But you need guys on that defensive line to help you now, and a lot of those are going to be young guys. What's Daryl Taylor going to look like? You need to make these picks pay off because you aren't going to get another bite at the apple for the next 2 years.
And I think that this is an important year, not just for Super Bowl aspirations and for you to become a legitimate Super Bowl roster and not just squeak by with a 7-point plus differential and make the playoffs like they did last year. They need this group, these young players, to step up so that this organization, John and Snyder and Pete Carroll's jobs, can be that much easier to continue to build this roster, continue to build this team over the next 4 years in this Super Bowl window that they have established here with this trade with Jamal Adams. If those young players do not step up, well, guess what? Their job becomes that much harder trying to draft, trying to fill those holes across the board in free agency rather than filling a few spots in free agency with legitimate star talent. That's when it becomes difficult for you.
I think it's always imperative that young players step up. Otherwise, your draft essentially is a bust. But I don't think that they're in Super Bowl or bust mode right now. I think that they're going to be pretty good over the next couple of years. Look, I think that they actually have a shot, believe me, especially with the addition of Adams. But knowing that you have Adams, and if you do end up signing him to a long-term deal, I think that extends the window to win a Super Bowl by quite a few years, not just like this year or next year. And they haven't signed him yet, but just let's assume that they do. I don't think that they're in win-now mode. I think that they'll be able to stay afloat. They do have to, like, at least make the playoffs and go, you know, 10-6, 11-5. Otherwise, those first-round picks that they gave up are going to really be looming large, because if they have a losing season and they go 4-12, 5-11, if they could have been picking in the top, say, 12, and you don't have those picks, that's a major problem. Like, that's the worst luck you could possibly have. But I think they'll be good anyway. I think that at least some of these young players will come through, although I'm not really betting much on Rasheem Green. Next. UConn has called it a season before they've had a season. UConn Huskies, my UConn Huskies. And I'm kidding. I don't really follow the UConn football team. I follow the basketball team pretty closely. But they're saying that they're not going to play this year. I don't think that that's going to have any kind of ramifications nationally, because there are so many other programs that it looks like they're going to try to play. Stacey, you feel differently about that?
No, I mean, I don't think it has a national effect. I think it's just news right now. I think it's something people are worried about. And so hearing that an FBS program has essentially canceled its season makes people nervous. But I think that this program in particular doesn't have the kind of weight on the rest of college football that something like, I don't know, Oklahoma, literally anything from like a Power Five conference would. So it doesn't make me more nervous. It's just kind of another kind of thing thrown on top of the pile that's kind of on your shoulders, wondering what the college football season's going to look like.
Well, to me, after having time to sit back and think through this, and I think Yogi puts it in tremendous perspective, I think, Tom, you've been one that has preached this time and time again during our show when breaking news has happened and people want to pile on or people want to implement their statement like it's fact before they actually have the information. Is you got to sit back and listen, and you got to sit back and you got to hear all of the information first before you go wild with your opinions. And I think Nick Rolovich is a perfect example of this. So many people were willing to call Nick Rolovich so many different things when it couldn't be further from his character, couldn't be further from what he has shown and displayed over his time as a coach throughout college football. And when it comes to light, it actually means, and you see that, okay, well, it wasn't exactly what Cassie Woods was portraying the situation to be. I think for players, they have to keep everything in perspective and realize two things. One, that you have an opportunity to better your future by continuing to try and play, and do it safely. Be responsible. Don't go out to parties and do ridiculous things that are going to put you and your team at risk and at risk of your season. And secondly, if you're trying to progress college football further with new ideas and transitions from a system that's taken advantage of college athletes for so long, then you've got to be able to understand that you're not going to get it done right away, And that you've got to be willing to sacrifice a few things here or there along the way to be able to get it done. So that's really what I've walked away from this whole situation thinking.
Man, I cannot imagine being in college and not being, whether you're an athlete or just a student, and not like being able to go to parties or bars or anything like that. Like, that's just insane to me. And COVID is COVID.
I know. And
that
I know
is a shame for those kids.
It is. And I know other students shouldn't either, just for fear of anyone getting sick. But it does once again drive home that double standard that exists for college athletes that doesn't exist for regular students. And again, if you're a college athlete, you're looking at that and you're thinking, well, am I a student or an employee?
I guess the students aren't on campus anyway at most universities, right?
Which makes it even crazier if I'm required to show up, but other students
true.
Aren't.
I agree, yeah. And this is the hard part, though. I agree, but they also are getting a full scholarship. They're getting everything paid for. They, you know, it's one of those things where, yes, there is a ton of hypocrisy in all of it. Go after name and likeness. Mm-hmm. Go after, you know, having your health benefits taken care of, because there's guys that have gotten stuck with things. I've been one of them. My credit when I came out of college actually was down to almost nothing because I had medical bills from colleges that I have attended that I had no idea were there.
That's
I just
crazy.
Assumed the college had taken care of those.
That's
because
insane.
it was my time as a college athlete. So I had to work my way out of that bad credit. And so those are things that should never happen to college athletes. So go after the things that are legitimately attainable and continue to keep working towards things that are maybe things that get fixed, you know, years down the road from now.
Remember, you now have radios in your home, smart speakers. Tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. The timeline is next. And Mr. Unlimited
Tom
is back. Oh,
don't,
God.
Tom.
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 No.
Tom.
Mr. Unlimited.
Tom. God.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We're reading you the top stories that you're going to see on your Twitter timelines if you haven't seen them already. And guess what? You get to revisit them again if you've already seen them because they're that good. If you see any you want us to include, go ahead and tag us at Stacy Rost, at Tom Wassel, at JT Heaps 9. Let's get this started. Jake, I'm looking at you because this is already your fault. A video that Russell Wilson posted from May of 2018 was found. Again, by an analyst, Warren Sharp, who posted it. And once again, the video is making the rounds on Twitter. Curtis, go ahead and play the audio right here in cut number 5.
Hey, guys. Russell here. Yes, the typical boring. Yes, Russell, the robot Russell, the one you guys love to know. Real exciting. You know, I'm real exciting. But anyways, everybody has to have an alter ego, right? And I've been thinking about what my alter ego would be. And I think I have an alter ego. His name's Mr. Unlimited. Yeah, you gotta be unlimited. You know, you gotta have a thought process of being unlimited.
Jake?
Yep.
Mr. Unlimited.
You had one job. It was to stop this video from coming back. You know what I'll say, actually, before? I don't want to sound like I'm making fun of Russell. I'm not a fan of the unlimited thing. Before that, when he's making the jokes about being boring, I feel like Russell Wilson could have good comedic timing. And then it's just the unlimited line won't stop.
I thought we buried this back in 2019.
No, Jake.
May of 2019.
Mr. Unlimited.
Stop it, please.
Do it one more time.
Mr. Unlimited.
But the only thing that I can find that is actually genuinely funny about this is that you have Warren Sharp, who brings this back up. Barstool is talking about this like he just posted this video yesterday or today or something. You know, and the only thing I could think of from the Northwest is we had our moment to talk about this and you know,
it was beautiful. I mean, it was wonderful.
Do all that 2 years ago. People are so far behind recognizing Russell Wilson and his accomplishments that they are now reacting to a video that was 2 years old. Like, that's how far behind people are. Keep up, people.
Make fun of him with new material.
Yes. If you want to make fun of him, make fun of him with new material. Don't go back into the archives. All right?
Mr. Unlimited. We've already done our part.
Yeah. The first part of it is not bad. I will say that, and I'll defend that take. The very first part of that video, even having already seen it 2 years ago, I was like, you know what? It starts out where you're like, what's this going to be? And then it... I can't. Jake, you know, you had one
trouble
job.
With it. This is the trouble with athletes and the fact that most of their lives are like planned out for the next couple of years. When you try to plan comedy like this, it just falls flat on its face.
Counterpoint.
Like comedy either happens or it doesn't.
Blake Griffin.
For people.
Literally
for people
a stand-up comedian.
Who?
Blake Griffin. He does stand-up comedy. He's really funny.
That's good.
He does?
Yes. He's really good at it. Like, legitimately.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, though. I don't necessarily believe Russell was trying to be a comedian. I think that, obviously, the first part, he was poking fun at people who have called him robots and things like that.
Right.
But, you know, trying to get the unlimited, you know, nickname going for himself. And I think that it got left quickly behind to where it was, and that was, it never really picked up steam. It was left in May of 2018, and that's where I would like to leave it, please.
Are you saying that wasn't supposed to be funny?
I think it was I'm bored, here's a video kind of thing, but it was from 2 years ago, so it's not like he just made this, you know. Maybe at the time 2 years ago there was more context.
No, there wasn't.
Mr. Unlimited.
Next story. Jalen Ramsey had a Zoom call with Rams reporters and got kind of tired of getting too many questions about his contract. Go ahead and play cut number 7 right here.
Is it important to you to have a new contract done before the season opener?
My agent and the front office, they'll handle all that.
Right. Right. But I mean, just for you mentally going into the season, is it important for you to have that security before you step onto the field for a game to have an extension?
My agent in the front office, they'll handle that. Come on now, you know I ain't gonna, you know, you gotta take the answer I give you, man.
Hey, Jalen, you had a chance to learn this game.
It is a fair question, though, considering,
I said my agent in the front office, they're going to handle it. I'm worried about what I can worry about. I'm controlling what I can control. I answered the question. I'm not going to continue answering it just because I'm not answering it the way that y'all want me to. Either accept the answer or keep it pushing. I don't want to get disrespectful, but that's the answer.
And then he walked away, right?
Yeah. I think he got frustrated. I mean, who knows how long that press conference was going? Like, maybe it was about to end, but clearly he was frustrated with not being able to answer. And he since, I don't know if any of you guys or anyone listening follows him, but he since tweeted out, LOL, I love the Rams PR and media that cover the team. They pushed me today for an answer about my contract. And then he does like a laughing emoji. The only answer I genuinely have is that I don't know. I can say I have the best agent in the game, though. And I can also say God's timing is the best.
He doesn't have to apologize or even, I mean, that's cool that he did tweet that out, but he doesn't have to. He has every right to leave that press conference. By the way, I'm a little surprised that the LA media, of all medias, pushed him on that. But he gave his answer twice. Like, why are they hounding him about that? Do they need to know that right now? He just said clearly, I'm not talking about that right now. Like,
right. And
what
then,
don't they,
and then
what
to
don't
go
understand about that.
Well, and then to go on and say, well, hey, you know, no, you should be answering this. It's a fair question. You know, things like that. Yes, he recognizes that it's a fair question. I don't think Jalen Ramsey said it wasn't a fair question. It's more of just, hey, this is the answer I'm giving right now. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm letting you know that I'm not going to talk about it. So let's move on to the next thing. And my understanding was Jalen, you know, was saying all this with a smile on his face, trying to not be negative, right? And so to me, you know, if I'm Jalen Ramsey or if I'm any player with these negotiations and I don't want to talk about it with the media, then the media also has to respect that opinion and also has to respect the fact and understand that he's not going to talk about it. So I think this one is on the media for you know, pushing this one on, and I don't blame Jalen one second for this.
Speaking of the timeline, bit of a convenient segment to have right now because NFL Network's Ian Rapoport just tweeted 1 minute ago that the Seahawks have claimed defensive back DJ Reed, a former fifth-round pick of the 49ers in 2018. So they add a depth piece. He started two career games as a free safety. Again, was a fifth-round pick in 2018 out of Kansas State. So add some depth there at defensive back.
Never heard of him.
That's okay. Just a bit of an update. Our last story here on the timeline, the NCAA is establishing a COVID hotline to report athletes violating protocol. This from Nicole Auerbach. It'll email to allow college athletes, parents, or others to report alleged failures of following COVID protocols. The NCAA will notify school and conference administrators who will then be required to take immediate action. Is this a snitch line?
Sure sounds
you know,
like it.
It does sound like it. Well, it is a snitch line, but I think you have to preface this with a different context in the sense of if I'm a player that's genuinely trying to make it through a season and I'm trying to do it healthy and I'm trying to make sure my team stays healthy and that there isn't a COVID outbreak that occurs, if I know that one of my teammates are being stupid and go out there and attend a party, yeah, I might be apt to tell somebody that they shouldn't be allowed to enter the building or they shouldn't be allowed to do this and that. But it just takes this whole different this takes it to a whole different level. But yes, essentially, this is a snitch line.
You know what? I'm trying to think if we had a snitch line here for some reason, like, would I tell on any of you guys?
Have you ever told on anyone, Tom? Like, tattled?
No, I don't usually
care enough
about other people's affairs.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. That checks out. I did tell on someone once in the fourth grade for cheating on a spelling test, and it's the most...
Wow.
Not the worst thing I've ever done as a human. The worst thing I ever did was, as Jake knows, it was to Sarah. In high school. We don't need to get into that. But I may or may not have tricked someone into voting for me for prom queen.
Sarah was cheating. No, I don't think I would do that. I just don't want to get involved, man. But you know what? When it comes to COVID and other people's health is at stake, I would seriously consider it. You know what I mean? Or I might say something to that person first. Like if Jake were out, you know, boogieing on the town or something, I might be like, Jake, what are you doing? You gotta stay inside.
So you think it could be teammates calling in on other teammates?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The way I'm reading it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Again, going back to that scenario, I want to play, you know, and if anybody's putting that in jeopardy, then I'm not going to be happy about it. And I think that's how a lot of players are feeling about this topic.
I want to ask Dave Wyman if he'd ever tattle on anybody, whether it's the NFL, college, or any scenario. We'll ask him next. 710 ESPN Seattle.